one of the most impressive young players to emerge in the 90s, the 1990s, was a kid named Joshua Redman. And he was just a total package, man. Could play his butt off. He had great music. He had a great vibe to himself. He was just uncanny intelligent, just communication skills, you know, just everything about him. He was just the real deal. Reminded me of a nouveau Cannonball Adderley kind of guy, you know. Can play, got a sense of humor, very, very intelligent, very, very creative. Turns out that this guy started life in Berkeley, California in 1969. Through the efforts of his parents, Dewey Redman, great jazz tenor saxophone, and Renee Shedroff, the mother, who was a dancer and also a librarian. The word is, you can't find this stuff in encyclopedias and wiki and all that. You just have to know about musicians, word of mouth kind of thing. And he was a bad cat growing up from the very beginning. He could play from the very beginning. He always had first chair at all the all-city bands, all-county bands, all-state bands, everything. He was just the cat on the saxophone. But he was also an academic beyond belief. You know, pretty much getting one of the highest scores recorded on the National Merit Scholars Exam, all of that. And so although he had this unbelievable talent on the saxophone and had this lineage from his father being one of the most respected saxophone players of his generation, young Josh decided that he would, you know, go for the money. And so I think he actually had two directions he was looking at. One was medicine and one was law. He ended up at Harvard. That's right, Harvard. Talking about a little brainiac here. And he took his sax with him, thank God for that. And he ended up finishing all 4 years there while hanging out with cats at Berkeley and been going to jam sessions and playing gigs, but he ended up getting that degree. And not just getting the degree, graduating with a summa cum laude and a member of Phi Beta Kappa. So this man is extremely accomplished, not just as an artist and musician, but as an academic. He had been accepted into the Yale Law School before he ever graduated college. And that summer after graduating, he decided that he'd take a little time and look around, see what's happening. He had some friends he knew from Berkeley who were moving to New York, like all musicians who want to play do. And so he got a call from them and said, "Hey man, we have one more bed here that you can have really cheap, and you can be in New York with us for a while." So he went, "Okay, this is cool. These are people I know. It's in New York. I can live there inexpensively. You know what? I think I'll do it." So he goes to New York just to hang out for a while and ends up getting involved in the jam sessions and this and that and that thing and the other thing, and something happened. He's approached by a guy I know very well, a master of jazz drumming, one of the most influential of all time, Mr. Elvin Jones. And Elvin has a group, at that time he's calling Young Bloods, because he's by far the oldest thing in the group, by maybe 30, 40 years. He got all these young guys in their 20s, and Elvin probably at that time was in his 60s. And one of the sax players was Javon Jackson. My son Greg played in the Young Bloods with Javon Jackson and Delphio Marcellus and many other cats. Later on, he missed Josh, but Josh was yet a sax player in that iteration of the Young Bloods. And that was his first touring experience and his first recording experience. Somehow, he never made it to Yale. because his father saw what was going on and heard the potential. His father's obviously an accomplished musician, he's got a recording contract, everything else. So his father gives him a leg up by recording an album that he affectionately called Choices, because this is the place that George was at this point. He's trying to make some choices. The album is called Choices. It is under the leadership of Dewey Redman, the father, and the son, Josh Redman, is a guest artist on the album that is called Choices. Soon after that album was released, the choice had been made. There were no longer choices. It was just a choice. And that was, he was going to pursue the life of a musician. And thank you for that, because he had become one of the most prolific performers, composers, band leaders of all time. Now, there are a lot of connections with this guy, Josh Redman. I've never met him, but I know a lot of his people. One of his groups had a piano player named Peter Martin, who played in the FAMU Jazz Ensemble with my older son, Frank. And the other is Chris Thomas, who is a bass player, who actually introduced my son Greg to Delphi and myself and got him his first professional gig. And they were all playing together with Josh Redman. Brian Blade is another common friend. He was in the very first group that Josh had. Brian, Ms. Meldow was also in that group. And Christian McBride, great bass player, no disputing that, was also in that group. So Josh also had this ability to pull great musicians as his supporting cast. And not just all straight-ahead acoustic cats. His second album was called Wish. And on that album, he used Pat Metheny on guitar. Another album that I really, really love is some of Pat's best work, I think. Not many people know it because it's Josh Redman, but I recommend it quite highly. And through the years, you know that Josh has a wide array of influences. And he cites his influences as everybody from John Coltrane to the Beatles. That's right. And he's recorded with a wide range of people just like that. He recorded with the Rolling Stones. He's recorded with so many funk and R&B and hip hop artists, it's not even funny. He was working with Shirley Scott when she did one of her last albums that also featured Miles Davis's last straight ahead solo. Josh has been a guy who has been able to attach himself to whatever musical influences are out there and do it with great credibility. He's like a chameleon in the world of music, because when he does it, it doesn't sound like, well, he's trying to do this. Oh, no. It sounds like he's now doing this music, and now he's doing that music, and it's all done with the highest level of integrity. He has been very, very prolific. He has surrounded himself with some of the greatest musicians that are available, from Mulgrew Miller, you name it, Elvin Jones, all the straight ahead guys, Pat Metheny, Brian Blade. He is just one of those guys who is also a nice human being. So people like working with him. Consequently, he works across genres and idioms. And Rolling Stone fans may not be as familiar with the name Josh Redman as they may be with that solo they heard on that Rolling Stones recording that was just killer. Josh Redman is still prolific, and he's still exploring new avenues of expression. However, he does not forget where he came from. And one of his most recent recordings features the very first group he had with Brad Mehldau and Brian Blade and Christian McBride. He went back 20 years into his career, almost 30 years into his career, and reconstituted that group in order to revisit some of the explorations they were making back in the mid-90s. I cannot say enough about Josh Redman. And there's no way that I can stand here and tell you enough about Josh Redman. Josh Redman can tell you more about Josh Redman with one note, from his horn, than I could tell you if I talked here for another 10 hours. So my sincere recommendation is, if you do not know with great intimacy the work of Mr. Joshua Redman, consider his creativity. Consider his intellect. Consider that he comes from two creative parents, one a dancer and one a jazz saxophone player. Consider all of that and then ask yourself, why are you late to the dinner table? Because those of us that know have been sitting here enjoying this scrumptious meal that Josh has been preparing for us for over 20 years, and you just been missing out. Joshua Redman, baby, he's still with us and he's still doing his thing. Go get some quickly.